It's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Field, GM of Investments at Fed Group, to What's Next. Now, in an era marked by global economic uncertainties, and boy, oh boy, do we see these uncertainties happen all over the place, the landscape of investments undergoes constant evolution, and responsible investment practices are crucial for safeguarding the integrity of investment portfolios. Now, in this episode, we explore strategies for navigating investments in volatile markets with a focus on fostering stable returns for investors. We will also explore the essentials of developing investment offerings, guiding financial advisors on navigating volatility, and of course, promoting stable investment journeys for their clients. So, when you look at this current economic global climate, what factors should investors prioritize when crafting investment strategies? And that's the first question I want to ask you, Michael, because it's a critical one. And firstly, welcome to you and thank you for joining us for this episode of What's Next. Michael Field, of course, is the GM of Investments at Fed Group. And yeah, the markets are very volatile, aren't they, Michael? I mean, what advice do you give? What factors should investors like myself prioritize when looking at their investment strategies?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Great to be here. I think it's, as you say, we're in a strange time. And I think a lot of this is coming from, you know, COVID on the back of that. And we saw some strange things. In particular, it synced up a lot of countries all going through, for example, interest rate cycles at the same time, all experiencing inflation at the same time. You know, so much of the developed economies experiencing meaningful inflation for the first time in such a long time. We saw Japan increasing rates the first time in 17 years. You know, these are unusual markets or certainly things we haven't seen for a long time. I think our view for the longest time, but more important now more than ever, I would say, is diversification. And it's an old message. I think the key is it's about true diversification. And what I mean by that is it's about understanding what's actually affecting your portfolio. So for so long, we've had the blinkers on. We've been having this incredible run in equity markets, for example. And so everyone sort of took diversification to mean don't be in a single stock. Maybe they were running on a 70-30, you know, equity and bonds split. Some of these very simple notions. I think we're seeing some of those things aren't quite good enough anymore. And it's about saying, what's actually driving the performance of my portfolio? And how do I diversify those elements? How do I use some different instruments? Sometimes it's a bit of good old back to basics. How do we incorporate that back into a portfolio? How do we take some of the first rule of investing is don't lose money. Some of that type of mentality going forward, in particular in these strange times that are so hard to predict where we're headed.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting when you look at it from that perspective, you know, and yes, you're quite right. You know, the lay of the land when it comes to investing and when it comes to kind of predicting what's happening in the world, it's so volatile, right? You can't predict. And, you know, you touched on COVID and of course there's climate change. You look at these natural disasters that are happening. There's a lot of uncertainty. So how can investors mitigate risk and maintain that stability amongst these market fluctuations you spoke about?
Yeah. So I think it's for us about incorporating some elements to stabilize a portfolio. And, you know, as I've already alluded, this is not about shifting everything, but this is about building in those different blocks. We've seen, for example, fixed rate investments, some of the simplest instruments out there. that is a market that has grown 500% in terms of how much people are bringing in to those sorts of instruments over, you know, the last number of years. So that's a trend that's been really growing. I think it's particularly in South Africa, you know, a lot of the uncertainty and things we've spoken about so far has been global. If we layer on top some of the South African elements, where a investor can incorporate some fixed rate instruments into a portfolio, that just provides that nice solid foundation. They know what they're going to get, and it also serves as a little bit of a mental relief. You know, I think so much of investing, and we're always told keep emotion out of investing. Easier said than done. We're human beings. We're living in the real world. We're seeing what's happening to the bills every month. And so where we can utilize investments that help us keep some of that stability, maybe our share portfolio is not doing well. And in recent times, it probably isn't doing well. But we've got an element that is still just carrying on. It's doing what it's supposed to. Fantastic element. We've seen in recent times, that's one of the top performing asset classes in investors' portfolios. I think there are other ways as well. So again, this is something we do a lot of. We look at some of the more deep fundamental elements, and how can an investor gain exposure to investments that fundamentally have less volatility. So let me give some examples. Number of years ago, we sort of had a look at the landscape and we said, if everything, you know, is in turmoil, and little did we know what was in store for us, but we sort of took that position and we said, people are going to need energy, people are going to need to eat. You know, when one looks at the budget, we're still going to use electricity, we're still going to cook our food, and we're still going to need that food to eat. And so we positioned many of our portfolios, a big portion of the business in what we do, around energy and food. And so how have we done that? Predominantly green energy, and solar being the poster child there. That's something, you know, we've been busy with for almost a decade already. We're a big player in that industry, and we place a lot of investment in that industry. Similarly, agriculture. People need to eat locally and globally. But more than that, we look at how we participate. So this is not to say almost sector bets. We look very specifically. And so we say, how can we reduce volatility even within those elements which have reduced volatility themselves? So what that means is, in agriculture, for example, how do we make sure that these are crops that can be sold locally and globally? That allows us to guard against currency risk. So we talk about that as natural hedging. So this is not derivatives and, you know, fancy instruments trying to, you know, bet against the market. But this is saying, if the rand is doing really well, we can sell it onshore. If the rand isn't doing well, we can sell it offshore. For an investor, at the end of the day, it's going to balance out and they're going to get a good, smooth return. Not a perfect, you know, straight line, but much more stable, reduced volatility. These are some of the things that we spend a lot of time on, and it's really worked out well for many of our investors.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting look at it. I mean, you took the worst case scenarios across anything. You put it all into that into that mix and work out what if this happens, what if that happens. And it makes sense what you're saying, you know. You've got to try and eliminate risk at the end of the day. So what types of investment products hold the most promise for adding long-term value and stability to investors' portfolios?
Yeah, so I think I've touched on some of that in terms of these things that are robust to what might happen over time. You know, what does the future of NVIDIA look like? Anyone's guess. What is the chances people are still going to be eating regardless of what happens with AI? It is a certainty. So I think that's a very important element. I think particularly when we start talking about that longer term, that's where how you participate becomes really important. And I think it's been a popular topic around things like ESG. Now, we don't particularly like ESG as a framework and a concept, and it's largely because it's been misused. The principles have been lost in the noise. But if we consider, you know, strip out the noise there, and we're looking at sustainable business practice, let's call it that. That makes a lot of sense when you're investing for the long term. And it's things that is easy to chalk up to nice to haves, to call, you know, social responsibility, and it's something we do on the side when we've got too much profits. No, for us it's something very different. It's about how do you run a business in such a way that you will continue to be operating. So again, if we talk to some examples, we know agriculture in South Africa often becomes a complex issue. It's around land, it's around labor, some of these questions. In the most simple terms, it's a lot cheaper and easier to look after the community that you're operating in than to hire all the security guards in the world and try and, isolate yourself from that community. And those are the kinds of things where you say, well, how do we set this up that we're not chasing 2-year return and we're going to exit? Now, this is not a private equity style model. This is good long-term business practice. Similarly, how do you operate a business that is not chasing a quarterly share price or daily share price in some cases? How do we set it up that it is holding reserves, that it is taking the conservative views? You know, we've seen a number of listed entities in South Africa, let's be kind and say, sailing too close to the wind. For us, it's about saying, how do we keep that conservative view, that long-term view going? Because if investors are wanting to be there for the long term, and that is the best way to go about investing, then surely what they're investing into has to align to those principles rather than, you know, what's a share price over the next quarter. So those are some of the principles that I think hold well for an investor, aligning their views to what's ultimately happening.
Can I just add to what you're saying? So it's all about that stability, right? You bring stability to your investment portfolio and not the unexpected stuff. As you said, you used a great example in the beginning. You don't know what to expect with a lot of these stocks. You know, a lot of people are saying they're overinflated. You know, nobody knows. But with this, you're bringing that stability and consistency.
Yeah. So I think one of the key things I was talking about, an investor aligning their sort of goals and horizons and those things to those underlying assets. One of the sort of implied points in there is that an investor knows what's actually underlying those investments. And I think that's something we've seen so much of in recent times, where investors have no idea what underlies their investment. We've seen in many cases asset managers and industry professionals have no idea what underlies those investments. Obviously, 2008 subprime being the poster child of that. But in many cases, that obscurity remains. And I think that's another point that we're seeing investors are demanding to know: what are they invested in? How is this going to play out? How is it going to be affected by some of these things? And those are the right questions for investors to be asking.
You mentioned earlier about diversification and the importance of diversification. So what role does diversification play in building that resilient investment that you talk about in a portfolio, especially here in South Africa, when, you know, markets are quite volatile, there's political uncertainty, and when you consider the volatile performance in more of the traditional asset classes, such as equities, it really brings diversification into play in a big way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's, for me, I always like to draw this distinction with what I call true diversification. And it is, for example, it's not about saying, well, I'm not going to be owning the shares of one bank. I'm going to own the shares in three different banks and call that diversification. We've seen in recent times a massive part of a bank's performance is down to what's happening on an interest rate. So actually, I'm not diversifying by being in three banks. I'm still concentrated in exposure to interest rate movements. And so it's about understanding some of those elements. I think, you know, we talk a lot. We're big believers in fixed rate investing. We're big believers in alternatives, some of these different underlying elements. That said, we don't advocate that that should be a client's entire portfolio. A client should have exposure to some equities. They should have exposure to offshore, obviously aligned to what it is they're trying to achieve. But it's that mix and understanding what that mix is doing for the portfolio. As well as, these things can be somewhat fluid. So, you know, what is the expectation that the JSE starts to fly over the next year? And, you know, we could have a days-long debate on that question alone. But if one were to sort of take a view and say, at the very least, it doesn't feel like 100% sure bet. So this notion that equities are always going to outperform, maybe that's a question that we should be asking: is that assumption valid? Is that assumption valid in our current environment and for our foreseeable future? My view? No, I can't see that is a 100% sure bet, not by a long shot. And so let me pull in some of these other elements. Let's pull in some fixed rate things. Let's pull in some alternatives, some things that are going to add some stability, that are going to perform in a counter-cyclical manner. When the JSE is not performing, there are other elements of the economy that are performing. Maybe a really obvious example, but it's worth highlighting. If you're in the solar installation business, business is booming. Business has never been better. And that's against a really tough economic environment. So it's about seeing where you can position yourself and your portfolio to take advantage of these things. Having a mix of them allows you to get a couple of guesses wrong and still have a portfolio that's doing well.
Okay. And when you look at those investment strategies, how can investment strategies be aligned with the long-term interests of the economy, because you know you can't look at the short term, you've got to look at the long term. And I think it's important for those financial gains, because you know that's what finance and investing is all about. You're in it for the long term. So talk to me about those strategies and aligning those strategies to that.
Sure. So I think that that's happening at a couple of layers. On the one hand, it is for us as a business and how we look to participate and position ourselves, and how we structure our investment portfolios and the like, as well as the investments and the companies that we work with and the like. That sustainability for us is everything. And you know, I sort of touched on it earlier. This is not about charity. This is not about you know, ticking the box of being a good corporate citizen. It's about saying, how do we do this in a sustainable way, by which I mean that even in the bad times, this is an initiative that is covering its face. And more than that, washing its face. But these are initiatives that actually are generating good profits. You know, we like to talk about the three P's, and that is people, planet, but not at the expense of profit. And so what we've seen is you can do a lot of good, a lot of long-term things that are looking after the people of our country, the communities that we're operating in, that are good for the planet, that actually, let alone they're not, not only are they profitable, but they are more profitable because of the way you're going about it. I think if we look at the agricultural sector, it is the best example of where that long-term thinking has to be taking place. If you are not looking after the soil, if you are not managing your water resources, you have no future. You know, a lot of those businesses are long-term by nature. If you consider nut trees, for example, these are things that can take 5 to 15 years to start, you know, producing at top levels. If you're taking a 4-year look at things and calling that long-term, these things haven't even switched on. So you have to be looking after that community, those natural resources. But done correctly, that is going to result in better profits for the farmer, but also for that investor that is backing them along the way.
Okay, and of course the sustainability equation is a no-brainer either. Now, when you consider all of these factors, Michael, what role do FSPs play in developing the products that you talk about that suit the evolving nature of the industry? And of course the broader economy, right, in which they operate. It's not just about, you know, the industry and the investor needs. You've got to look at it from a broader perspective in an economy.
Absolutely. So I think we've seen for a long time the industry has had the blinkers on, and I think we see how obsessed the industry is with equities, for example, as an asset class. And in many ways, that's because in our recent past, they performed quite well. They were the poster child. Everyone wanted to be in the hottest portfolio with the best stock picks. On the other hand, they are fun to talk about. It's called a spade a spade. It's everyone likes this notion. You know, it's sort of modern day panning for gold and looking for that nugget, which is the stock. And we can get into these debates, and you know, it's quite engaging. You know, an asset manager gets on stage, gets on a platform, and talks about these things. If we strip away some of the lipstick, are those fundamentals still valid? is what it really comes down to. And and I think it's so difficult for an industry to sort of put up its hand and say, hang on, the world has evolved a bit and we need to catch up. That's not an easy thing for many people to do. And so I think it's on an industry to take that step back, say, yeah, traditional asset classes, they're not going anywhere. This is not, you know, some new dawn, throw everything out. But it's to say, we need to look with a bit more nuance. There's more going on. If we just look at the JSE, we've seen a number of delistings. We're seeing more companies delist than new listings. Now, what is important to notice there is those companies are not shutting down. They are delisting. So what's typically happening is it's some combination of a private capital is backing them or a manager buyout, something along those lines. What that means is someone is seeing value in some of those companies, but they're seeing that value being better unlocked outside of a listed equity space. If you, as an asset manager, as the industry, are ignoring what is happening, you are ignoring what all those people are doing. They are saying, there is value in these companies. We're going to go unlock it over here. If you turn a blind eye to it, you're missing all that opportunity. You know, I talked earlier, the solar example. There are elements of this economy that are really flourishing. If we're sticking to our blinkers, we're missing it, and we're painting everything with the same brush. As an industry, it's on us to allow those opportunities to get to our clients and allow them to enjoy those benefits.
When you look at these kind of investments, and you know, people deal with financial advisors, for example, how can financial advisors help their clients navigate this volatility you speak about and achieve these stable returns on their investments? They obviously have a critical role in this.
Absolutely. So I think us as a business, we've always been firm believers in financial advice. I often like to use the example myself as an industry professional. You know, this is what I do all day, every day. I have a financial advisor. And in my case, it's less about knowledge. You know, I know the industry, I know the products well. It's a sounding board. It's a person to help me take some of my own emotion out of that investment. And I think advisors bear an enormous responsibility. They have to manage the factual elements, the emotional elements. And in a similar way to what we said with the investment industry, the people putting together these products, the responsibility also sits with an advisor to help educate their clients on what is happening in the environment, where these opportunities are, why they are putting forward things which might be a little less familiar, helping them navigate which is the right options to be going into. You know, should they go left or right when they venture into alternatives, for example? You know, not all alternatives are created equal. How do they find good providers versus other providers which might be, you know, less reputable, which might be taking more risk than is necessary, these types of things? So I think it's an incredible responsibility sits with those advisors.
Yeah, and I guess to our conversation, I think that when you look at these advisors and you look at how they've been doing things traditionally, and they all talk about the diversification we talk about, they really need to scratch the surface even deeper when it comes to diversification. And I also think that it's also, the onus also lies on the clients to ask their financial advisor, how are you diversifying my investments? Are you looking at this? Are you looking at that? Are you looking at that? Et cetera, et cetera. Because it certainly has changed over the last few decades. There's no doubt about it. And we're moving into an era of uncertainty, as you mentioned. When you look at all of this, what are some of those key considerations for developing investment offerings that prioritize the stability that I spoke about and, of course, that long-term growth that you keep referring to?
So I think so much of it is about helping clients with their advisor to navigate a world which is maybe less familiar to them. So, I think so many when they studied, for example, so much of the material out there talks to a 70-30 equity to bond split as a diversified portfolio. Some of these old notions. When you suddenly come and say, hey guys, there is more that we need to be considering. We have to help make that accessible. We obviously bear that responsibility to put out good product. For us, that means not taking excess risk. It means keeping it simple. It means making sure advisors are really clear on what this product is about, who it is suitable for, ensuring it is going to the right clients. And so that's something we spend an enormous amount of time on. We're always looking at how can we help train that advisor market better so that the right product is getting to the right client. How can we reduce risk without, losing all benefits? Clients want to make a good return. They need to make a good return. If they're going to get, meaningful growth above inflation, they need to be really active. And it's saying, how do we craft those elements to get them something that's going to achieve those outcomes?
Absolutely fascinating and an interesting way of looking at investing. And I think at the end of the day, it's all about educating ourselves, educating the financial advisors. And it's also empowering the investor, right, to go in and ask those right questions and say that I'd like to know more about my portfolio. What is that long-term growth? Where does the stability lie? And once you empower yourself, you're able to make more informed decisions on your investments going forward. Fascinating chat. Michael Field is the GM of investment groups at Fed Group. Go and check them out. They really have a different outlook to investing, and it's absolutely fascinating. And once you start dissecting it, it makes perfect sense. Michael, thank you so much for your time and joining us for this episode of What's Next.
Oh, your pleasure. Thanks so much.